Any and all views expressed on the Devil in the Details are entirely my own. While I am a member of the Church of Satan, I do not speak for the Church of Satan. Welcome to The Devil in the Details, the show where we talk about skepticism from a satanic perspective. I'm your host, The Satanic Skeptic. Netflix has a history of putting out misleading or sensational documentaries like Fall River or Sons of Sam. So when I saw they were releasing a documentary about the Devil Made Me Do It case, the case of Arne Johnson, which inspired the Conjuring movie of the same name, I didn't have very high hopes. The documentary is called The Devil on Trial, and I have to say, it's worth checking out if you're interested in the story, but on its own, it's not very good. It features interviews and never-before-heard testimony that does shine a new light on this case. The story begins with Johnson and his fiancée, Deborah Glatzel, working to clean up a rental property they were set to move into. Deborah's 12-year-old brother, David, was helping them, until he began to see an old man, quote, with burnt-looking skin and a plaid shirt torn at the elbow, pointing a finger and warning him, beware. At first, Arne Johnson and Debbie Glatzel thought David was just trying to get out of helping, but in time, David began claiming the old man's visage changed to that of a demonic creature, with big black eyes, a thin face with animal features, and jagged teeth, pointed ears, horns, and hooves, who spoke in Latin and threatened to take his soul. Things escalated when David began experiencing night terrors, and bruises and scratches started to appear on his body. Around this time, David's mother, Judy, explained he would kick, bite, spit, swear terrible words, as well as thrash about like a rag doll, which Judy maintained must be supernatural, as he can't even do a sit-up. He's too fat. Wow. He's too fat. That's what a thing for a mom to say. At the suggestion of the pastor of St. Joseph's Roman Catholic Church in Brookfield, self-proclaimed demonologist Ed Warren and his wife, self-proclaimed clairvoyant and medium, Lorraine Warren, were contacted by the Glatzel family. Surprise, surprise, the Warrens declared David Glatzel was possessed by no less than 42 demons. The Warrens claimed to have requested permission from Bishop Walter Curtis of the Diocese of Bridgeport for an exorcism to be performed on David, and that the bishop assigned Father Francis E. Vergilak to the case. A representative for the Catholic Church confirmed that Vergilak and three additional priests were asked to investigate, but denied that any exorcism had been performed, or that any formal request had been made. So, the Warrens are on their own. They don't have any sanction or support from the Catholic Church. So you'd think they'd leave well enough alone, right? Of course not. They're the Warrens. Ed Warren's a demonologist. He's got this. It was during one of these unspecified number of exorcisms that Arne Johnson commanded, I don't know if it was the devil or just one of those 42 demons or all of them, that he commanded, Arne Johnson said, take me, leave this boy alone. And so, David Glatzel was miraculously healed and everybody lived happily ever after. Well, the Warrens did, but we'll get to that in a minute. Several months after this alleged exorcism, on February 16, 1981, Arne Johnson called off sick from his job at Wright Tree Service and joined Debbie, his sister, Wanda, and Debbie's 9-year-old cousin, Mary, for lunch, which was paid for by Debbie's boss and their landlord, Alan Bono. They went to a local bar for lunch, and Arne Johnson and Alan Bono were repeatedly drinking heavily. After lunch, the group went back to the kennel where Debbie and Alan worked. Arne Johnson and Alan Bono then got into an altercation, during which Arne Johnson drew a 5-inch bladed knife and stabbed Bono more than 20 times, mostly to the chest, but with one of the wounds stretching all the way from Bono's stomach to the base of his heart. Arne Johnson then fled on foot, but was apprehended and arrested by Sergeant Gordon Fairchild of the Brookfield Police Department. As he was placed in the cruiser, Sergeant Fairchild claimed Johnson told him, I need help because I have a drinking problem, and claimed he had no memory of the event. Later, when Arne Johnson was told that the police station that Alan Bono had died of his injuries, Sergeant Fairchild said Johnson was incoherent before falling asleep, or possibly passing out, for about half an hour. Now, Call me crazy, but this sounds like somebody who got blackout drunk. I mean, Arnie Johnson was aware enough to know he had a drinking problem. He didn't say, "I have a demon problem." In fact, the first person to declare this the work of the devil was Lorraine Warren, telling Brookfield police that this was a case of demonic possession. Well, once that got out, the media was all over the story. Now, I imagine as a defense attorney, at this point you've got two options. Either you try to quash the story as kooky dukes for a more conventional defense, like self-defense, or you lean into the crazy and make that your defense. Neither of those is what Martin Minella, the defense lawyer for Arnie Johnson, did. According to Minella, interviewed as part of the devil on trial, the Warrens approached him with evidence that Arnie Johnson had been possessed, and despite claiming to be skeptical of the paranormal, Minella admitted he came to believe after seeing the evidence. So, on October 28, 1981, Minella entered a plea of not guilty by reason of demonic possession to the Connecticut Superior Court in Danbury. Now, what's really interesting about this is that Minella is alleged to have consulted with lawyers in England who had presided over two similar cases in the past, one of which there's reason to believe was the 1974 case of Michael Taylor, who, as his behavior deteriorated and became more and more erratic, was given an exorcism and then proceeded to go home and murder his wife in a horrifically brutal manner. So, great job there, Power of Christ. Really compelling. He tore off her face, ripped out her tongue, and gouged out her eyes with his bare hands. It's not sure whether Christine Taylor died of shock or asphyxiated on her own blood. If that wasn't gruesome enough, not even the family dog was spared. Taylor strangled the dog before tearing it limb from limb, then ran outside the house naked and covered in blood, screaming like a maniac. So, you'd think if the devil made me do it defense worked for such a deranged killer, Minella had this case in the bag. Except, the problem is, Taylor's defense didn't aim to convince the jury that he was actually possessed. Instead, they argued that the exorcism, as well as indoctrination by a fanatical prayer group Taylor was part of, pushed an already mentally unstable man over the edge. Ultimately, the jury agreed, and Michael Taylor was found not guilty by reason of insanity. So arguing for the reality of demonic possession is, well, it's a bit of a stretch. I would have argued something like, he was emotionally unstable, he was an alcoholic, had a drinking problem, and then you had these religious fanatics Ed and Lorraine Warren come in, and they convinced Arnie Johnson he was possessed. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but it seems like you'd have an easier time making that argument. As you might imagine, the judge presiding over the trial, Robert Callahan, wasn't buying any of it, rejecting the defense as irrelevant and unscientific, given that, well, what evidence did they have exactly that demons were real, or that Arnie Johnson had actually been possessed by one of them at the time of the murder? The testimony of Ed and Lorraine Warren? Oh, that's compelling. So, left with no other choice, the defense chose to argue that Arnie Johnson had murdered Alan Bono in self-defense. The problem with this is, although the jury would have been directed to disregard the claims of demonic possession, it's not hard to see how it would be difficult to square the defense arguing that Arnie Johnson was not in control of his actions with the argument that Johnson had the presence of mind to try and defend himself. Either he was responsible for his actions, or he wasn't. The jury deliberated over a period of 3 days before convicting Arnie Johnson of first-degree manslaughter on November 24, 1981, and he was sentenced to 10 to 20 years in prison on December 18th. Remarkably, after only 5 years, Johnson was released for good behavior. Although demonic possession never entered the official records of the trial, the publicity the case generated, thanks to the Warrens, was later seized on by NBC to produce a made-for-TV movie creatively titled The Demon Murder Case, starring Kevin Bacon and Cloris Leachman. Realizing there was money to be made, Lorraine Warren worked with author Gerald Brittle, who'd already written a book about the Warrens called The Demonologist, and together they turned the possession of David Glatzel and murder of Alan Bono into the book The Devil in Connecticut. Lorraine Warren maintained that profits from the book were shared with the Glatzel family. However, Carl Glatzel Jr., David's older brother, whom we'll be hearing a lot from in a minute, revealed the family only received $4,500. Arnie and Debbie Johnson received $2,000, both out of an estimated $81,000 that the Warrens pocketed. In 2006, The Devil in Connecticut was republished, and at this time, Carl Glatzel decided to sue Brittle and Warren for violating his family's right to privacy, libel, and intentional infliction of emotional distress. Back in 2007, Carl Glatzel told Mass Media Distribution Network, "My brother was never possessed. He, along with my family, were manipulated and exploited, something the Warrens were very good at. And along with their author, Gerald Brittle, they concocted a phony story about demons in an attempt to get rich and famous at our expense, and we have the evidence to prove it." It wasn't simply monetary damages or exploitation that Carl said his family suffered from. According to him, publicity from the case had damaged his friendships, relationships, and business opportunities. I think it's also reasonable to assume a certain degree of trauma that Carl himself suffered, as he claims he was present when Alan Bono died, quite literally dying in his arms. Ed Warren died before the lawsuit was brought forth, but Lorraine Warren was still alive and defended her and her husband's reputation in court, saying there was tremendous documentation and that the cream of the Catholic Church was involved. At the time, Carl Glatzel and his brother, David, were co-authoring a book about their experience, Alone Through the Valley, and created a GeoCities website to promote it. When I briefly spoke with Carl Glatzel in 2022, he alluded that the book was still being written. However, given that he and David appeared in The Devil on Trial to spill the beans, as it were, I'm not sure where that leaves the status of the book. Evidently, David had a change of heart, as he appears in The Devil on Trial, but does so expressing wholeheartedly that he believes he was genuinely possessed. Carl Glatzel, on the other hand, maintains that the Warrens promised them they'd be rich and famous, but ultimately exploited their story for their own gain. Even David Glatzel, despite the sincerity of his belief in his own possession, calls the Warrens con people and said, "If they can profit off you, they will." The last 5 minutes of The Devil on Trial drop a veritable bombshell in this case. Carl Glatzel describes how, after both his father and mother had died, he and his wife were sorting through their belongings, and Carl describes his mother as something of a, she had OCD, she wrote everything down, kept a detailed calendar, a detailed diary, and Carl says he found a note which said, "Well, the family had their medicine tonight, and everything was good." The medicine in question was Somanex, an over-the-counter sleep aid with the active ingredient diphenhydramine. Carl says he recalls his mother always preparing their food separate from hers, which he believes was her way of drugging the family to make them all tired, docile, and make things easier for her. Now, there's no way to know whether that's true, and even if it were true, there's no way to know how long she may have been doping the family on Somanex. What is worth considering is that an overdose of this antihistamine can cause agitation, confusion, delirium, nervousness, tremors, and hallucinations. Given that David was the youngest child, it's reasonable to think he would have been the person most at risk for diphenhydramine overdose, if the drugging really did occur. If none of the rest of the family, or the Warrens, were aware of this, and Judy was ignorant of the effects of an overdose, it's not hard to see how they could have seen David's behavior as classic symptoms of demonic possession, instead of what they really were. I think the saddest thing about this whole case is the way the Warrens exploited the Glatzels and the effect the whole thing's had on the family. David, Alan, and Carl Glatzel all express how their family was divided on what really happened. Carl Sr. and Jr. never believed that David or Arnie were possessed, while David and Alan and Arnie to this day do, and Debbie believed in Arnie's innocence until her death in 2021. Of course, it goes without saying that the family of Alan Bono are also victims, and there's something about Arnie Johnson's presumed innocence that just doesn't sit well with me. I don't know how long a prison sentence is appropriate for murder. If you ask me, as a Satanist who believes in Lex Talionis, the punishment should fit in kind and degree the crime. In cases like this where one person witnesses one person stabbing another, there's no doubt about what happened or who was responsible, the penalty should be death. If you murder someone deliberately, you've forfeited your freedom to live within society. You've violated the social contract. The idea that Arnie Johnson doesn't accept responsibility for what he did, doesn't accept responsibility for getting drunk and ultimately killing another man, only served 5 years in prison, and got to marry his girlfriend and go on to live a relatively normal life. Worse, a life where he gets to feel sorry for himself and have other people feel sorry for him because he was possessed, is something that I find wholly contemptible. If you like this episode and you want to hear more, you can check out The Devil in the Details on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Amazon Podcast, manifest this episode into your podcast app of choice. If you want more satanic content straight from the devil themselves, check out these other podcasts, Satansplained by Magister Bill M. You can find it at satansplained.com. And as far as YouTube channels go, I'd also recommend Demented One. And if you search for the YouTube channel Evil Live, that's EVILLIV3, you can listen to a lot of re-uploaded satanic content from Magister Campbell's previous shows, Nine Cents and Speak of the Devil. If you want to learn more about scientific skepticism, you can check out Squaring the Strange on Libsyn, Spooky Science Sisters, Skeptoid, and Holy Kool-Aid on YouTube is also another really cool show. If you want to join the fight against misinformation and pseudoscience, and if you're listening to this podcast, you really should, please consider donating to the Center for Inquiry, the parent organization for the magazine I write for, Skeptical Inquirer. If you have any questions or would like to shoot me a line, you can reach me on Facebook at The Devil in the Details. My handle is Satanic Skeptic. Maybe consider subscribing to the podcast or liking the Facebook page. You can also check out the articles that I write for Skeptical Inquirer at skepticalinquirer.org, and for more pop culture-related skepticism, aiptcomics.com. Until then, the devil of doubt calls forth mankind to challenge all things, question all things. May the Luciferian light of reason guide you on your way ever forward. Hail science, hail reason, hail Satan.